We meet on the same page.
Mistake.
Haribo. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. This is Sri Brahma Sanghita, which was discovered by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he was traveling in South India in the Adikeshava temple. He took permission from the custodian of the temple to have this book copied, and he distributed it to all his favorite devotees. So we're going to first read the translation, five verses at a time. We'll go clockwise around the room, and each devotee will read five translations, and then afterwards we'll stand up and we'll recite the Brahma Samhita before Sri Sri Radha Madan Mohan. Starting on page one, Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the Supreme Godhead. He has an eternal, blissful spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, and he is the prime cause of all causes. The spiritual place of transcendental pastimes of Krishna is portrayed in the second verse. The super excellent station of Krishna, which is known as Gokula, has thousands of petals and a corolla like that of a lotus sprouted from a part of his infinitary aspect, the whorl of the leaves being the actual abode of Krishna. The whorl of that transcendental lotus is the realm wherein dwells Krishna. It is a hexagonal figure, the abode of the indwelling, predominated and predominating aspect of the Absolute. Like a diamond, the central supporting figure of self-luminous Krishna stands as the transcendental source of all potencies. The holy name, consisting of 18 transcendental letters, is manifested in a hexagonal figure with sixfold divisions. The whorl of that eternal realm, Gokula, is the hexagonal abode of Krishna. Its petals are the abodes of gopis, who are part and parcel of Krishna, to whom they are most lovingly devoted and are similar in essence. The petals shine beautifully like so many walls. The extended leaves of that lotus are the garden-like dham, that is the spiritual abode of Sri Radhika, the most beloved of Krishna. The surrounding external plane of Gokula is described in this verse. There is a mysterious quadrangular place named Shvetadvip surrounding the outskirts of Gokula. Shvetadvip is divided into four parts on all sides. The abode of Vasudev, Sankarsana, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha are separately located in each of these four parts. These four divided abodes are enveloped by the fourfold human requirements, such as piety, wealth, passion, and liberation, and also by the four Vedas, namely Rig, Sama, Yajur, and Atharva, which deal with the mantra and which are the basis of achievements of the fourfold mundane requirements. 10 tridents are fixed in the 10 directions, including the zenith and nadir. The 8 directions are decorated with the 8 jewels of Mahapadma, Padma, Shankha, Makara, Kachapa, Mukunda, Kunda, and Nila. There are 10 protectors, Dikpalas, of the 10 directions in the form of mantra. The associates of the hues of blue, yellow, red, and white, and the extraordinary potencies bearing the names of Bimala, etc., shine on all sides. Okay, so we should have several microphones, and we're going around this way, so you're up next, Loka. Read 5. Start with 6 and then read 5 verses successively.
The Lord of Gokula is the transcendental supreme Godhead, the Om Self of eternal ecstasies. He is the superior of the of all superiors, and is busily engaged in the enjoyment of the transcendental realms, and has no association with his mundane potency. Krishna never consorts with his illusory energy. Still, her connection is not entirely cut off from the absolute truth. When he intends to create the material world, the amorous pastime in which he engaged by consorting with his own spiritual cheat, potency, Ram, by casting his glance at the deluding energy in a shape of sending his energy in an auxiliary activity. The secondary process of association with Maya is described. Rama Devi, the spiritual cheat potency, beloved consort of the Supreme Lord, is the regulatrix of all entities. The divine plenary portion of Krishna creates the mundane world. At creation, there appears a divine halo of the nature of his own subjective portion, Swamsa. This halo is divine Shambhu, the masculine symbol of manifested emblem of the Supreme Lord. This halo is the dim twinlight reflection of the supreme eternal effulgence. This masculine symbol of the subjective portion of the divinity who function as progenitor of the mundane world, subjects to the supreme regulatrix Nijati. The conceivings potency in regard to mundane creation make her appearance out of the supreme regulatrix. She is Maya, the limited, non-absolute, apara potency. The symbol of the mundane feminine productivity, the intercourse of these two brings for the faculty of perverted cognition, the reflection of the seed of the procreative desire of the Supreme Lord. All of springs of the consort of the great Lord Maheshvara of this mundane world are the nature of the embodiment of the mundane masculine and feminine generative organs. The person embodying the material causal principle viz. The great lord of the mundane world Maheshvara, Shambhu, in the form of the male generating organ. As joined to the female consort, the limited energy, Maya. As the efficient causal principle, the Lord of the world, Mahavishnu, is manifested in him by his subjective portion in the form of his glands.
Hare Krishna. Text 11. The Lord of the mundane world, Mahavishnu, possesses thousands of heads, eyes, hands. He is the source of thousands of avatars in his thousands and thousands of subjective portions. He is the creator of thousands of individual souls. Text 11. translation.
12.
The Lord of the... Text 12, translation. The same Mahavishnu is spoken of by the name of Narayana in this mundane world. From that eternal person has sprung the vast expanse of water of the spiritual causal ocean. The subjective portion of Sankarshan, who abides in Paravyom, the above supreme Purusha, with thousands of subjective portions, reposes in the state of divine sleep, Yoga Nidra, in the waters of spiritual causal ocean. Text 13, translation. The spiritual seeds of Sankarshan existing in the pores of skin of Mahavishnu are born as so many golden sperms. These sperms are covered with five great elements. Text 14, translation. The same Mahavishnu entered into each universe as his own separative subjective portions. The divine portions that entered into each universe are possessed of his majestic extension, that is, they are the eternal universal soul Mahavishnu possessing thousands and thousands of heads. Text 15, translation. The same Mahavishnu created Vishnu from his left limb Brahma, the first progenitor of beings, from his right limb and from the space between his two eyebrows, Shambhu, the divine masculine, manifested hell. Hare Krishna.
The function of Shambhu in relation to jivas is that this universe enshrining the mundane egotistic principle has originated from Shambhu. Thereupon, the same great personal Godhead, assuming the threefold form of Vishnu, Prajapati, and Shambhu, entering into the mundane universe, plays the pastime of preservation, creation, and destruction of the world. This pastime is contained in the mundane world. Hence, it is being perverted. The Supreme Lord, identical with Mahavishnu, prefers to consort with the goddess Yoga Nidra, the constitute of his own spiritual potency, full of the ecstatic trance of eternal bliss appertaining to his own divine personality. So in Vishnu, lying in the ocean of milk, wills to create this universe, a golden lotus springs from his navel pit. The golden lotus with its stem is the abode of Brahma, representing Brahmaloka or Satyaloka. And before their conglomeration, the primary elements in their nascent state remain originally separate entities. Non-application of the conglomerating process is the cause of their separate existence. Divine Mahavishnu, primal Godhead, through association with his own spiritual potency, moved Maya, and by the application of the conglomerating principle, created those different entities in their state of cooperation. And after that, he himself consorted with Yoga Nidra by way of his eternal dalliance with his spiritual potency. By conglomerating all those separate entities, he manifested the innumerable mundane universes and himself entered into the inmost recess of every extended conglomerate. And at that time, those jivas who had lain dormant during the cataclysm were awakened.
On page 36.
The same jiva is eternal.
Hold that microphone really close.
The same jiva is eternal and is for eternity and without a beginning, joined to the Supreme Lord by the tie of an eternal kinship. He is transcendental spiritual potency. The divine lotus, which
which springs from the navel pit of Vishnu, is everywhere related to the spiritual tie with all souls and is the origin of the four-faced Brahma versed in the four Vedas. On coming out of the lotus, Brahma, being guided by the divine potency, turned his mind to the act of creation under the impulse of previous impressions, but he could see nothing but darkness in every direction. Then the goddess of learning Saraswati, the divine consort of the Supreme Lord, said thus to Brahma, who saw nothing but gloom in all directions, O Brahma, this mantra, Klim Krishnaya Govindaya Gopi Janavallabhaya Swaha, will assuredly fulfill your heart's desire. O Brahma, do thou practice spiritual association by means of this mantra, then all your desires will be fulfilled.
Brahma, being desirous of satisfying Govinda, practiced the cultural acts for Krishna and Goloka, Lord of Swatadvipa, for a long time. His meditation ran thus. There exists a divine lotus of 1,000 petals, augmented by millions of filaments in the transcendental land of Goloka. On its wall, there exists a great divine throne on which is seated Sri Krishna, the form of eternal effulgence of transcendental bliss. Playing on his divine flute, resonant with the divine sound, with his lotus mouth, he is worshipped by his amorous milkmaids with their respective subjective portions and extensions, and also by his external energy, who stays outside, embodying all mundane qualities. Then Gayatri, mother of the Vedas, being made manifest, that is, imparted by the divine sound of the flute of Sri Krishna, entered into the lotus mouth of Brahma, born from himself, through his 8-year holes. The lotus-born Brahma, having received the Gayatri, sprang from the flute song of Sri Krishna, attained the status of the twice-born, having been initiated by the supreme primal preceptor Godhead himself. Enlightened by the recollection of that Gayatri, embodying the three Vedas, Brahma became acquainted with the expanse of the ocean of truth. Then he worshipped Sri Krishna, the essence of all Vedas, with this hymn. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, the first progenitor who is tending the cows, yielding all desire, in abodes built with spiritual gems, surrounded by millions of purpose trees, always served with great reverence and affection by hundreds of thousands of Lakshmis or Gopis. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is adept in playing on his flute, with blooming eyes like lotus petals, with head decked with peacock's feather, with the figure of beauty tinged with the hue of blue clouds, and his unique loveliness charming millions of cupids.
I worship Govinda, the primeval lord, round whose neck is swinging a garland of flowers, beautiful with the moon locket, whose two hands are adorned with the flute and javelin ornaments, who always revels in pastimes of love, whose graceful threefold bending form of Shyamasundara is eternally manifest. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, whose transcendental form is full of bliss, truth, substantiality, and is who's full of the most dazzling splendor. Each of the limbs of the transcendental figure possessed in himself the full-fledged function of all the organs, and eternally sees, maintains, and manifests the infinite universes, both spiritual and mundane. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is inaccessible in the Vedas, but obtainable by pure unalloyed devotion of the soul, who is without a second, who is not subject to decay, is without a beginning, whose form is endless, who is the beginning and the eternal Purusha. Yet he is a person possessing in the beauty of blooming youth. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, only the tip of the toy of whose lotus feet is approached by the yogis who aspire after the transcendental and betake themselves to pranayama by drilling the respiration, or by the gyanis who try to find out the non-differentiated Brahmans in the process of elimination of the mundane extending over thousands of millions of years. He is an undifferentiated entity, as there is no distinction between potentia and the possessor thereof. In his work of creation of millions of worlds, his potency remained inspirable. All the universes exist in him, and he is present in his fullness in every one of the atoms that are scattered throughout the universe and one and the same time. Such is the primeval Lord whom I adore.
I adore the same Govinda, the primeval Lord, in whose praise men who are imbued with devotion sing the mantras, suktas told by the Vedas. By gaining their appropriate beauty, greatness, thorns, conveyances and ornaments, I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, residing in his own realm, Goloka, with Radha, resembling his own spiritual figure, the embodiment of ecstatic potency, possessed of the 64 artistic activities, in the company of her confidantes, Sakhis, embodiments of extension of her bodily form, permeated and vitalized by his ever blissful spiritual rasa. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is Shyamasundara, Krishna himself, with inconceivable, innumerable tributes, whom the pure devotees see in their heart of hearts with the eye of devotional taint, with the slave of love. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who manifested himself personally as Krishna and as different avatars in the world in the form of Rama, Narasimha, Vamana, etc., as his subjective persons. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, whose effulgence is the source of all non-differentiated Brahmana mentioned in the Upanishad, being differentiated from the infinity of glories of the mundane universe, appears as indivisible, infinite, limitless truth.
Hare Krishna. Translation by His Divine Grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is the absolute substantive principle, being the ultimate entity in the form of the support of all existence, whose external potency embodies the threefold mundane qualities,
that is Sattva, Raja and Tamas, and diffuses the Vedic knowledge regarding the mundane world. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, whose glory ever triumphantly dominates the mundane world by the activity of his own pastimes, being reflected in the mind of recollecting souls as the transcendental entity of ever blissful cognitive rasa. Lowest of all is located Devi Dham, mundane world. Next above it is the Mahesh Dham, abode of Mahesh. Above Mahesh Dham is placed Hari Dham, abode of Hari. And above them all is located Krishna's own realm named Goloka. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who has allotted their respective authorities to the rulers of those graded realms. The external potency Maya, who is of the nature of the shadow of the Chit potency, is worshipped by all people as Durga, the creating, preserving and destroying agency of this mundane world. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda in accordance with those with whose will Durga conducts herself. Just as milk is transformed into curd by the action of acids, but yet the effect curd is neither same as nor different from its cause, that is milk, so I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, of whom the state of Shambhu is a transformation for the performance of the work of destruction. Hare Krishna.
The light of one candle being communicated to other candles, although it burns separately in them, is the same in its quality. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who exhibits himself equally in the same mobile manner in his various manifestations. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who, assuming his own great subjective form, who bears the name of Shesha, replete with the all-accommodating potency and reposing in the causal ocean, with the infinity of the world in the pores of his hair, enjoys creative sleep, Yoga Nidra. Brahma and other lords of the mundane worlds, appearing from the pores of hair of Mahavishnu, remain alive as long as the duration of one exhalation of the latter, Mahavishnu. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, of whose subjective personality, Mahavishnu, is the portion of portion. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, from whom the separated subjective portion, Brahma, receives his power for the regulation of the mundane world, just as the sun manifests some portion of his own light in all the effulgent gems that bear the names of Suryakanta, etc. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, whose lotus feet are always held by Ganesh, upon the pair of tumuli protruding from his elephant head, in order to obtain power for his function of destroying all the obstacles on the path of progress of the three worlds. Microphone. Oh, you didn't get a chance. Go ahead, please.
The three worlds are composed of the nine elements: fire, earth, ether, water, air, direction, time, soul, and mind. I adore the primal Lord Govinda, from whom they originate, in whom they exist, and into whom they enter at the time of the universal cataclysm. I adore the primal Lord Govinda, by whose...
Did you get this? 52. The sun who is the king of all the planets.
The sun who is the king of all the planets, full of infinite effulgence. The image of the good soul is as the eye of this world. I adore the primal Lord Govinda, in pursuance of whose order the sun performs his journey, mounting the wheel of time. I adore the primal Lord Govinda, by whose conferred power are maintained and manifested potencies that are found to exist of all virtues, all vices, the Vedas, the penance, and all jivas, from Brahma to the meanest insect. I adore the primal Lord Govinda, who burns up to the roots all fruitive activities of those who are imbued with devotion and impartially ordains for each of for each the due enjoyment of the fruits of one's activities. Of all those who walk in the path of work, in accordance with the chain of their previously performed works, no less in the case of the tiny insect that bears the name of Indra Gopa than in that of Indra, king of the Devas. I adore the Primal Lord Govinda, the meditators of whom, by meditating upon him, under the sway of wrath, amorous passion, natural friendly love, fear, parental affection, delusion, reverence and willing service, attain to bodily forms befitting the bodily forms befitting the nature of their contemplation.
I perceive that the transcendental seed, known as Svetadvipa, whereas loving consort the Lakshmi in their unalloyed spiritual essence practice, the amorous service of the Supreme Lord Krishna, as their only lovers, where every tree is a transcendental purpose tree, there is the soil is the purpose gem. All water is nectar, every word song, every gait is a dance. The flute is the favorite attendant. Effulgence is a pool of transcendental bliss, and the supreme spiritual entity are all enjoyable and tasty. Where numberless milk cow always emit a transcendental ocean of milk. Where there is eternal existence of transcendental time, who is ever present and without a past or future, and hence is not subject to the quality of passing away, ever for the space of half a moment. That realm is known as a Goloka. Only a very few self-realized souls in this world. On hearing hymns containing the essence of the truth, the Supreme Lord Krishna said to Brahma, "Brahma, if you experience the inclination to create offspring by being endowed with the real knowledge of the glory of Godhead, listen, my beloved, from me to the science set form forth in the following five slokas. When the pure spiritual experience is excited by means of cognition and service bhakti, super excellent, unalloyed devotional characterized by love for Godhead is awakened towards Krishna, the beloved of all souls. The highest devotion is attained by slow degree by the method of constant endeavor for self-realization with the help of scriptural evidence. Theistic conduct, the perseverance in the practice. The preliminary practice of devotional sadhana bhakti are conducive to the realization of loving devotion, then whom there is no superior well-being, who goes hand to hand with attainment of the exuberant state of supreme bliss, and who can live to myself.
Abandoning all meritorious performances, serve me with faith. The realization will correspond to the nature of one's faith. The people of the world act ceaselessly in pursuance of some ideal. By meditating on me, by means of those deeds, one will obtain devotion characterized by love in the shape of the supreme service. Listen, O Vidhi, I am the seed. That is the fundamental principle of this world of animate and inanimate objects. I am Pradhan, the substance of matter. I am Prakriti, material cause, and I am Purush, efficient cause. This fiery energy that belongs especially to the Brahman, that inheres in you, has been also been conferred by me. It is by burying this fiery energy that you regulate this phenomenal world of animate and inanimate objects. A couple of verses we'll look at before we chant. One is on page number 40, text number 24. Uvacha puratastasmai tasya divya saraswati kama krishnaya govinda he gopi jana ityapi balabhaya priya haner mantram te dasyati priyam. I'll say, please repeat. Uvacha said purataha in front tasmai to him tasya of him the Supreme Lord. Dibya, divine. Saraswati, the goddess of learning. Kama, the Kama Bija, cling. Krishnaya, to Krishna. Govinda, Govindaya, to Krishna. To Govinda. He, O Gopijana, of the gopis. Iti, thus, api, also, balabhaya, to the dear one, priyavanehe, the wife of Agni, swaha, the word swaha is uttered while offering oblations. Mantram, mantra, te, to you, dasiti, will give, priyam, the heart's desire. Translation. Then the goddess of learning, Saraswati, the divine consort of the Supreme Lord, said thus to Brahma, who saw nothing but gloom in all directions. O Brahma, this mantra, namely, Kling Krishnaya Govindaya Gopijana Balabhaya Swaha, will assuredly fulfill your heart's desire. Purport. The mantra, consisting of the 18 divine letters prefixed by the Kama Bija, is alone super excellent. It has a twofold aspect. One aspect is that it tends to make the pure soul run after all attractive Sri Krishna, the Lord of Gokula and the divine milkmaids. This is the acme of the spiritual tendency of jivas. When the devotee is free from all sorts of mundane desires and willing to serve the Lord, he attains the fruition of his heart's desire, namely, the love of Krishna. But in the case of the devotee who is not of unmixed aptitude, this super excellent mantra fulfills his heart's desire also. The transcendental Kama Bija is inherent in the divine logos located in Goloka, and the Kama Bija, pervertedly reflected in the worldly affairs, satisfies all sorts of desires of this mundane world. Om Jnana Timanandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamnina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Nina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadahmayam Tadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Parakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shivishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindo Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatrubhyascha kripasindubhyevacha patitanam pavanibhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktabinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this verse, Uvacha Puratastasmai Tasya Divya Saraswati Kama Krishna Govinda He Gopi Jani Tibi. What did you notice about the verse and the purport so far that caught your attention? That means something to you. What does it mean? What does this verse and purport mean to you practically? Kama Krishnaya Govinda He Gopi Jani Tipi. Keep the microphones flowing. Turn that on.
That there's a magic in the mantra, or there's a miracle in a mantra.
Magic means?
Something's out of this world.
Can you grab the dictionary for her? Give her the dictionary, she can look up magic. So you said there's magic in the mantra. Well, that's pretty exciting news. Everyone's looking for magic, right? People go to Disneyland, and the kids are always looking for magic. They want some magic ring, or they want some. People write stories and movies about magic rings and magic potions and things like that, right? So this is fascinating. Let's find out what magic actually means. In the meantime, yes, go ahead. Make sure the microphone's on and then speak loudly into it.
And the mantra is part of the Gayatri mantra.
You notice that. It is a mantra which is given in the group of mantras we receive when we take second initiation. This particular mantra is the most important out of all of them. There's the Brahma Gayatri mantra, which we receive for Upanayanam, which is many people in India receive this from their parents when they're young. Then there are other mantras, which are the Guru Mantra, the Guru Gayatri. Then there's the Gaura Mantra, the Gaura Gayatri. And this is the Krishna Mantra, actually, this mantra we're looking at here. It's the Pradhan Mantra for all of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, the mantra from which all the other mantras expand. So, magic.
Magic is the art that purports to control or forecast natural events, effects, or forces by invocating supernatural, the practice of using charm, spell, rituals to attempt to produce supernatural effect to control the events in nature.
So your postulation is, again?
Particularly where it says... The Kama Bija alone is super excellent, and it has the twofold aspect that it makes the pure soul run after the all attractive Sri Krishna. So by these words, that's what's happening.
So by the mantra, you're saying it has magic in it.
Yeah,
it produces something that's supernatural beyond what we could ever expect, right? So, Krishna says to Uddhava when he's teaching him in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that the way you purify a mantra is by learning about it. When you study a mantra, you purify it, because the more you study it, the more you understand its power, the more you become fascinated by it. This is kind of fascination. The whole one major section of the book, Brihat Bhagavatamrita, is partially about the efficacy of this mantra, the Krishna mantra, and how a very innocent person receives a mantra. Gopal Kumar gets a mantra from his family deity, who's actually an expansion of Durga, Kamakshadevi. gives him a mantra in a dream, and he has no spiritual education, no education at all, but he, out of gratitude, begins to chant the mantra, and then there's a miraculous journey that he embarks on because the mantra is pulling him along. The mantra pulls him through many, many different circumstances where he meets what he thinks is his heart's desire, the association of a certain kind of devotees who are worshiping one or another aspect of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But ultimately, the mantra draws him all the way back to Goloka Vrindavan because that's his natural place. And to remember this, how this mantra is a blessing given to us by above. In fact, here we understand how Brahma was bewildered in his as he appeared in this world, he came into darkness, as we sang the verse earlier, Om Agyana Timirandasya. We're blind, andasya, and it's because of the darkness of ignorance. So everyone who comes in this world is in the darkness of ignorance. And then Krishna, by his causeless mercy, extends himself to us. And this is the way he extends himself, through this mantra. He comes through his representative. This is the process of diksha. When we take the diksha means divyam jnanam yato dadyat. It gives us divine knowledge, divyam jnanam, and it crushes all our previous tendencies to sin in this world, to go off the track of spiritual pursuit. And so actually Krishna is within the mantra, the deity is within the mantra, and there's magic there because Krishna is magical, right? Can anybody give a verse that elaborates that more about how Krishna is magical? How he has supernatural powers? Pass the microphone. You should have a microphone for this quadrant. That there's three microphones, right? One should stay here, and one in the back.
Angani Yasin is a clean devritimanti. So Krishna, each of his organs, each of his senses, can perform the functions of all other senses. So that is magical.
Yeah. So Krishna can hear with his hands.
Yes.
Or he can eat with his eyes, right?
And he actually, with his looks, with his glancing over the material energy, he manifests all the living entities in different bodily forms.
Maya dakshena prakritihi. Just by looking, he manifests, makes everything work.
Yes.
Thank you very much. So when we chant this mantra, we should meditate on Krishna, remember his unlimited merciful power. Atapite deva padambuja dvaya prashada leshana grihita evahi. Just by getting a trace of Krishna's mercy, prashad, then we can understand everything about him. So we take the mantra in the form of mercy, that it comes as something that's bequeathed to us. Bequeathment is it's a kind of a gift somebody passes down to us. And so we should take the mantra in that mood. And it then this purport says that there are two effects of the mantra. There can be two effects according to our state of consciousness. So what is that about? Let's talk about that because that's important. How do we prepare ourselves to chant a mantra? Hare Krishna Hansapriya. So what are the two? Yes. Use the microphone because this is an internationally broadcast event. And if you don't use the microphone, then our audience can't hear.
Hare Krishna. Thank you. Regarding your question,
hold it close to your mouth.
Regarding your question,
and turn on the microphone.
How we should
turn
chant.
On the microphone? Is it on?
Okay. It is on.
Good.
In humble state of mind.
Won't you take in a humble state of mind? Yes. What else?
Thinking.
Yes. Definitely in a humble state of mind. We're receiving a gift that's coming down to us, so we should take it in a humble state of mind.
Actually, I follow the same thing that we learned at the Japa retreat, that we said, Susu Swagatam Nama Prabhu, So same with the mantra, because we invite the mantra also to come and realize that it's not different from the Krishna. Actually feel that in that present moment, feel the presence that it's not different from Krishna, and then start chanting there.
Very nice. What is the effect of the mantra which is being explained here? There's a twofold effect. One effect is that it causes one to run after Krishna, which is the natural tendency of all jivas. This is what it says in the purport. So as we chant the mantra, we'll feel the natural tendency to run after Krishna. And what's the other effect? Is it?
Actually, it says it fulfills the mundane desires.
So it says it fulfills your desires, whatever desire is there. So this is a very interesting thing, because on one side, please move up. You can sit in front. Use all the front seats first. So if I have some mundane desire, if I have some desire to be fulfilled within my heart and I chant the mantra, will the mantra fulfill my desire? According to this purport? Yes? Yes.
Yes.
So Krishna is described, may I please have a seventh canto? Grab me a seventh canto really fast. Seventh canto. Prahlad Maharaj describes how Krishna, it's on top. Krishna just, Prahlad Maharaj describes how Krishna is a desire tree. Have you all been to a desire tree recently? Desire tree. Kalpavriksha.
Kalpavriksha.
I'm not talking about the website. Although it's a nice website. I have nothing against it. Have you visited a desire tree?
Chintamani preparers have no Kalpavriksha.
Hmm? You haven't found one yet? Well, the mantra is a desire tree. This is equivalent to what's being said here. This mantra that you're chanting is like a desire tree. So I want you to all just imagine how your life is going to change in a couple of minutes. Okay? Because right now I want you to meditate that outside this classroom there is a desire tree. You know, a desire tree will fulfill all your desires, right?
Yes.
Any desire that you have. Now, I want you to very carefully consider what kind of... Yes.
We do have a desire tree that we experience every day. Vanchakalpa tarubhya chakra prasandhubhya evacha patitanam pavanabhya vaishnavebhya namo namaha. So when we recite and pay obeisances to all the Vaishnavas, they are like the desire trees.
Yes. Just okay, so we believe in desire trees. The desire trees are there. Now, the point of this whole the section of the purport is that whatever you desire, the desire tree will fulfill your desire. You're chanting the mantra and you have a desire, the mantra will fulfill your desire, yes? Right? Okay, I'm going to read the verse from Prahlad Maharaj. Naisha paravara matir bhavatona nu syaj jantur yatat masurido jagatas tatapi sangsevaya surataror ivate prasada sevanu rupam udayona paravaratvam. Translation: unlike an ordinary living entity, my lord, you do not discriminate between friends and enemies, the favorable and the unfavorable. Because for you, there is no conception of higher and lower. Nonetheless, you offer your benedictions according to the level of one's service, exactly as a desire tree delivers fruits according to one's desires and makes no distinction between the lower and the higher. So now the desire tree that's outside, it makes no distinction between who you are, lower or higher. It only considers what your desire is. Now, in a couple minutes, we'll go out one at a time. and you can sit under the desire tree. I want you to meditate on this. You sit under the desire tree, and whatever desire is there within your heart this morning will be fulfilled without fail. Now, what desire do you have in your heart? That is the question. This brings into focus the importance of purifying our desires as we chant the mantra. So there are two things we're doing as we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and as we chant this Krishna Mantra, which we receive in the Diksha ceremony, that we must consider what do I want? What am I desiring? And therefore, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that there are two aspects to chanting Hare Krishna. This keeps getting away from me. One is that you must chant Hare Krishna. And the second is what? Do you just chant Hare Krishna and nothing else matters? Or what's the second aspect? Attentive. What does attentive come in the category of? What if you're inattentive? What's inattentive chanting? It's an aparadha, right? Radha means to worship properly, and aparadha means outside the realm of worshiping correctly. So if you're inattentive while you chant, what kind of inattention can you do when you're chanting? Unlimited, right? So this is a kind of aparadha. So there's two things. One, you must chant. And the second thing is you must avoid aparadhas. You must avoid offenses while you're chanting. Those are two active things, aren't they? So there's two things. Not that you just chant, because our process is that if you just go on chanting and you commit offenses, it will take millions and millions of births, practically, to attain the perfection of chanting. However, as when you're growing a garden, you have to be careful to weed the garden. Otherwise, the weeds take over the garden, right? Similarly, when we chant, we also have to observe what is in my heart. What am I desiring as I chant? Otherwise, as it says in this verse, the mantra will fulfill your desire. It's a desire tree. If you have some mundane desire, then that will come out and it will fulfill your desire. So are you ready to go sit under the desire tree right now? Have you sorted it out, what your desire in your heart is? Honestly, I'm asking you, are you ready?
Yes.
You ready? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. Everyone else is ready?
Yes.
Yeah? You're certain you want to sit under a desire tree that will fulfill all your desires, no matter what they are in your heart. You're ready right now. You're positive?
Positive.
Okay, so part of the process of chanting means to be constantly looking and seeing, what am I desiring? What is it that's within my heart? Because you're, by chanting Hare Krishna, by chanting these magical mantras, you're actually sitting under a desire tree, and your desires will be fulfilled. So we have to be careful. We're approaching Krishna, and Krishna is magical. Krishna is all-powerful. And Krishna says, yeyata mam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham mamavartmanavartanta manushya partasarvasha. He's rewarding everyone, and everyone's connected to him in some way. And whatever people are getting is as a result of what they've desired and how they are going about living their life. And Krishna says, nadate kaschichit papam. I'm not responsible for the sins or for the pious activities of the living entities. He's not creating that. I'm creating it. This is the quintessential attitude of a Vaishnav. I'm creating it. Whatever sin I have, whatever sinful reaction I'm getting, whatever pious reaction I'm getting, all these things I've created by my own volition, because I have volition. Can you look up volition, please? I'm part and parcel of Krishna, just as Krishna is sentient and he has independence. I also have independence. It's minute because I'm tiny. But Krishna allows me that. And therefore, he gives us these instructions. And you'll find in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that he's instructing that you should raise yourself above your lower nature. You have to do it. Evam buddhi param buddhva samstam yatmanam atmana jahi shatra mahabaho kamarupa durashadam. The lower nature is dominated by this kama, generated from the mode of passion. Then we get lust, which accumulates within different parts of the body and which carries me away into unknown varieties of material nature, which keep me bound up and in darkness. But Krishna advises that I have to raise myself above these by the higher intelligence, using the higher intelligence to cultivate spiritual knowledge. So intelligence means discrimination. Intelligence means to see what's superior and what's inferior. That's what the intelligence does. It determines. Someone offers you two things and you have to look at it and say, and they say, which one do you want? And, you know, they have two apples and you look at them and your intelligence goes back and forth and says, I'll take this one. That's what it does. So similarly, as we're performing the process of devotional service, Krishna says we have to use our spiritually fortified intelligence to decide what's proper action, what's improper action, and what's a suitable desire, and what's a desire which is demeaning, which pulls me down. Which word are we looking at? Volition? Better use the microphone because all the people in the audience will want to hear also.
Volition, a conscious choice, the act of willing, choosing, and deciding.
What a word. A conscious choice, act of willing, choosing, and deciding. That sums up our nature. We have conscious choice. Or as we become more aware from the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, as we become clear from Krishna's instruction, now we have more and more conscious choice. When we're in ignorance, we don't have as much conscious choice because we are swept along by the modes of material nature. Nahi kaschit shanamapi jatu tishchetya karma krit. Karyate hivasha karma sarva prakriti jayargunai. Krishna says that everyone's forced to act helplessly and no one can stop doing anything even for a moment. And it's all because of the force of the modes of material nature. So when we get this information, spiritual information, for instance, what we're hearing today is that there is a way to associate with Krishna through the mantra. There is a way of receiving the mantra. And when we receive the mantra and associate with Krishna, there's a proper way to do it so that we become elevated. And therefore, we have to use our intelligence to discriminate. Am I doing it correctly? How can I improve the process as I'm approaching Krishna? So this Brahma Samhita, it's bringing us this direction. And this verse particularly is very powerful. Now let's look at the next verse. And my favorite purport in all of the Brahma Samhita comes in text number 25. Tapastvam tapa etena tava siddhir bhavishyati. I'll say the word for word and please repeat it. Tapaha. Spiritual austerity. Tvam, you, tapa, practice, etena, by this, tava, your, siddhi, fulfillment, bhavishyati, will be. Translation together. O Brahma, do thou practice spiritual association by means of this mantra, then all your desires will be fulfilled. And I'd like to read the purport aloud. Its purport is clear. So this, you can take to the bank, as they say, that this mantra, by practicing the mantra correctly, and how do we practice correctly? We must do it, we have numerical strength, which means we take a vow to chant regularly, and a certain amount every day. And we must also use our volition, which means what? We must use our volition, our conscious choice, to decide how to chant the mantra as if we're sitting underneath a desire tree and understand that Krishna knows everything. Where does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita that he knows everything? Does Krishna know everything? Go ahead, Brahmananda Saka Prabhu. What chapter is it in?
No, this verse may not be exactly, or maybe, he says, Sarvasya chaham hrudi sannivishta matta smritir jnanam apohanam cha vedasya sarver ahameva vedya vedanta krudveda videva chaham. But here he is saying that I am seated in the hearts of all living beings and from me come the remembrance, knowledge and ignorance, and I am the I am the source of the Vedas and I am the knower of the Vedas. But he is not directly saying that he knows everything there.
Does he say it directly? Somewhere else does he say it directly?
Yes.
Yeah, where? Seventh chapter? Yeah, where in the seventh chapter?
Vedaham samatitani vartamanani charjuna bhavishyani cha bhutani mamta vedana kashyana.
Bravo. And the meaning is?
I know...
Everything.
I know everything that has happened in the past, that is happening at the present, and that will happen in the future. I also know all living entities, but me no one knows.
Bravo. Good job. Thank you. So this... Meditate on this for a second. Don't just let the verse pass by you. These two verses that he just gave us. One is that Krishna is there within the heart. He's Sukrit. Su means very, very good. And Hrit means heart. So there's somebody very, very good within your heart. The Sukrit. Keep that in mind. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto. So, and he knows, he's entered there, and he knows everything, and he's all good. Is a very important thing. He's all good. And he's all knowing. Does it change your life to know? Last night when we were at the Harinam Sankirtan, two devotees were talking. And then they realized that maybe they were close to the microphone or that somebody was filming them. And they thought, we better be careful what we say because it could be on film. Sometimes we've seen at least a couple presidents of the United States. They've given a press conference and the microphone was still on. And then after the press conference, they thought it was over and they leaned over to one of their friends and they just said, you know, blah, 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 blah. And it was broadcast internationally. And they, hey, Mr. President, the microphone's still on. And then he realized, you know, what did I just say? Right? So we should think like that all the time, actually. The distinction between I'm saying this privately and I'm saying something publicly, if I understand... Vedaham samatitani vartamanani charjuna, that Krishna knows everything. And he's fully aware of what I'm saying, what I'm thinking, what I'm desiring. He's fully aware. Then that should, well, does it change how I act? Does it make me more aware? And also to know that he's fulfilling all my desires. Externally, I may present myself in one way, and internally, I may be another way. What does Krishna say about this in the Bhagavad Gita? Mitya chara su uchite. He's called a cheater. Who's he? Who's he cheating? He's cheating himself because he's not getting this tapasya, which is recommended in this verse. Tapas tum tapa etin tava siddhir bhavishyati. If you perform spiritual tapasya, which means to actually chant the mantra and hone your desire towards going back to Godhead and to avoiding offenses, then you'll attain all perfection by this process. But if I don't do that, if I maintain material attachments in my heart as I'm chanting, externally I may dress in a certain way, act in a certain way, and so on. But what will be the result ultimately? What will come out? It's just like Chanukya Pandit said, you don't have to brag about your money. Say if you have a lot of money, you don't have to go around and say, guess what, I have a lot of money. Because ultimately it'll come out. You know, when it's time, it's like, how come you're taking the month off? No, I don't know. Everyone just knows, well, he's got a lot of money. He's taking the month off. He doesn't have to work, right? You have to say anything. Someone drives up in an old beat-up car And they say, they advertise, I have a lot of money. Everyone sort of thinks, oh, yeah, right. So what we are is more important than what we know or how we portray ourselves. And that has to do with our honest relationship with Krishna. And this is a very important thing, honesty. Sattva means it's foundational. That we tell the truth to Krishna, to ourselves, to others, because ultimately the truth comes out over time. In the beginning, it may not seem convenient to be truthful and straightforward. But ultimately, whatever truth is there, it comes out. And whatever falsity I try to hide, it'll come out sometime. So there's a sense here in chanting mantra that I should become sincere, I should become truthful, and I should do self-searching to see what is my actual desire that I'm sitting underneath a desire tree, and what is it that I'm asking for. And I should have one-pointed attention as I chant. What other comments and realizations from these verses or the discussion so far? One thing that stuck in your mind or a question?
The verse 25th clearly expressed that spiritual association is with the mantra. So you have association, you're not alone.
That's very nice. Nice point. There's spiritual association through the mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So you can have association with Krishna, or you can have association with your mind. And how is the mind described in the Bhagavad Gita? Go ahead, tell us about the mind. Tell us that verse.
Chanchalam hi manah Krishna.
Pramati balavadridam. So these are descriptions of what the mind's like. And let's analyze what it is. Chanchala. What is the definition of chanchala? Give us a real life example. A monkey or child? I want you to listen for a second. Chanchal. It means that a child is everywhere, into everything, moving around, you know. What you show, I saw when Neeladri was at our house. She's 1 year old now, and at every second she's switching her attention from one thing to the next. You give her a little bear and she starts smiling, and then 2 seconds later she throws the bear, starts crying, and then you show her a mirror and she starts laughing, and then she throws the mirror, and then that's why when you go into somebody's house who has children, there's stuff all over the place. And that's how the mind is. You know, from the very beginning, from when we're born, we want this, we want that. If you went back and you counted up all the things that you actually wanted and then you threw to the side, it would block out the sun when you pile them up. Even the goodwill would not be able to handle all that stuff. And that's the mind. It says, I want this, I want this, I want this. Nah, I want this, I want this. No. And then it goes on like this, accepting, rejecting, over and over again. So this is chanchala. That's the mind, right? Chanchala himana Krishna pramati. What does pramati mean? Mad. What is madness? Look up madness. Madness. You ever deal with a mad person? Is it fun? They're mad. They're not talking the same language as you talk. They're incoherent. They can say anything. They can do anything. 1 minute they can be smiling at you. Next minute we meet on Sankirtan. Sometimes mad people, right? On Sankirtan, I was in Santa Cruz, and some young man came up, and he was ranting about something. I put my hand on his shoulder just to sort of pacify him, and he went crazy. He thought I was trying to attack him. He wanted to, you know, he became very agitated. He was mad. What does it say?
Madman or madness?
Let's try madman.
Madman. Madman is a person who seems to be mentally ill, and madness is insanity and fury.
Insanity and fury. So we have chanchala, we have, and then we have madness. We're putting all these together. This is the mind I'm living with, right? Chanchalam, throwing, moving, always going from one thing to the next, changing, and then mad, which means that like mentally ill. There's no rhyme or reason, and irrational, unreasonable. Someone wrote me recently and he said, I have some advice for you about dealing with unreasonable people. He said, don't. So the mind is unreasonable. This is pramati. Now next one. Pramati balavad. Balavad means very strong. So now we've got chanchal. We've got flickering, moving. We've got madman. And now this person is strong like anything. They're not somebody you can just, you know, sweep away and say, let's go outside. And they're like, rah. They're very, very strong. So now we got a problem, right? Somebody comes in here, they're chanchal, and they're mad, and they're really strong. They've been working out, and you know they know kung fu and everything. So that's the mind so far. We got one more, right? Dridham, determined, very determined. Now we know what we're up against. So the mind, chanchalam himana krishna pramati bhalava dridam. So this is what I'm dealing with when I go to chant. And it's no wonder that the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna tells Uddhava in the Srimad Bhagavatam that the mind has fearsome godlike powers. And it is only for the sake of the mind that I've been in this world life after life. Then I'm rotating from one temporary situation to the next because of the mind, right? Where else does it say that in the Bhagavad Gita? Some evidence about the mind and how it's directing us from one place to the next. Because when we leave the body, we're actually leaving. This is a bio machine I'm sitting in here. Look at this. Behold the bio machine. It runs on biofuel. I eat biofuel. I admit it. I eat biofuel and there's an internal combustion system. It's not me, it's a machine. And beyond, and subtler than that is the subtle body, which is composed of the mind, intelligence, and the false ego. And more subtle than that is the soul, the spiritual entity. But when I leave this bio machine behind, then the subtle body leaves, it goes to the next body, and it's much determined about what is the condition of my mind. Where does it say that in the Bhagavad Gita? Yes. Pundits, come on out now. Let's go. Work with me here. Don't say it like, you know, if you're going to say a verse, you come out, and if you're wrong, go down in flames. Come on.
Antakale cha mameva smarana muktava kalevaram tam tameveti kaunteya sadatat bhava bhavita.
Give us an explanation.
Whatever state of mind, Krishna is telling to Arjuna, whatever state of mind you quit this body, you will attend that without any doubt.
Yeah, what if you run around door to door today, you just knock on the door, people open the door and just tell them that one message. It's very powerful, right? That antakale, when you give up at the end of this body, chamam eva smaran mukva kalevaram, when you give up this body without question, whatever you're focused on, that's what's going to create your next body, right?
Yeah.
What else? What else do you have? Evidence. How the mind is the center. Yes, go ahead.
Hare Krishna, this is Shraddha Devi Dasi, Dhanvat Pradham.
Haribol,
Prabhuji. There's one more from chapter 15, which says, Shrotram Chakshu Spashnam Cha Rasnam Grahanam Evacha Adhishtaya Manas Chayam Vishayan Upasevate. And it says that the living entity takes another body and obtains a certain type of ear or tongue or nose, which are all grouped about the mind. And then he keeps on enjoying some sets of sense objects.
Thank you. Very important verse. And then in that same section, Krishna explains how somebody who's trained their in knowledge can see how this is happening, and other people who are ignorant of the process, they can't see what's happening. They just lament that the person's dead. Oh, they've died. But a person in knowledge, well, they didn't really die. What happened was they left that machine behind, and the subtle body carried them to the next destination. And it's a science. What is the condition of my mind? What kind of desires do I have? That will determine my next birth. So this is a science, Krishna consciousness. And as we chant the mantra, tapas tam, tapa etena tavasiddhir bhavishyati, this verse is saying, and its purport is clear, that by practicing the mantra, and practice means practicing correctly, it means practicing through numerical strength every day, I do the mantra without fail, and I also expunge from my consciousness these material desires and the distractions by avoiding the offenses against the holy name. Then tava siddhir bhavishyati. As I do this, I will attain all perfection. Nothing else needed. Association with the mantra. And then from my side, I must assiduously try to, not try, but I must assiduously weed out material desires from my heart. And how do you do that? Let's just talk about that as the last part of this discussion. And then we'll chant the Brahma Samhita together. How do you weed out the desires? We know that they may be there. Some of you said you're ready right now to go sit underneath that desire tree. And I believe you. And however, if there are desires lurking within the heart that come up that are not conducive to my spiritual advancement, how do I weed them out? What do you do? I want ideas backed with Shastra, please. Go ahead. Our back row is becoming very learned back here.
This is by chanting the Maha Mantra, and the evidence is Cheta Darpanam Arjunam Bhamaha Davagna Nirvapanam. This is from the Sixth Sastika.
And what does it mean?
It means which cleanses the mirror of the heart and extinguishes the blazing fire of material existence.
And what does it mean to you?
It means to me that it cleanses all the material desires.
We want to hear more what's in your heart. Your realization. You know, when you actually open your heart and you're vulnerable and you tell people actually what's going on in your life, then that's when everyone sits up and listens. It's actually interesting when people give Shastra and verses, but when someone sits up and says, well, I'm actually going to tell you where I'm really at. Now I'm going to tell you what I'm really thinking. And everyone's like, what? You're going to actually expose yourself and tell what you're really thinking? Everyone wants to know now. What is it? Okay, turn off the TV. We want to hear this. Okay, go ahead.
For me, this can go with the desires that we were talking about before, that this mantra fulfills any desire. But my condition is that I'm confused about these desires, because on the other hand, I may have material desires, but then I'm not supposed to desire them. So I don't know what is actually my current position there, whether I'm desiring it or not desiring it. I don't know. And the same thing is with the attraction to the holy name or attraction to Krishna. I feel that, that I must have that, but I don't know whether I really have it or not. So I'm just in a confused state.
Very interesting. Very interesting. And so there may be a stage at which I'm not entirely sure how to sort out desires. Like in the beginning, when I start making ghee, how do you make ghee?
Just melt the butter.
You take butter, what? And what is butter? It's one substance, right? And then when you heat it up, do you heat it up to get ghee?
Yes.
Okay. So as you heat it up, what do you get?
So when you heat it up, it melts.
Give her that mic. We want to hear about ghee. Okay, one substance, butter, then you heat it up?
When you heat up the butter, it melts, and actually some moisture separates out from
what's the moisture, and what is it? What do you separate? Do you take it out?
Well, I think people do it. Different people do it differently, but normally you add something to it which absorbs the moisture, and you can sieve it out later on.
Here's our ghee maker from ISV. Let's take our ghee maker. Come on, give him the microphone.
Actually, I was listening in the kitchen, and I was thinking that, you know...
Is that microphone on?
Is it on?
Yeah,
yes,
it is. Hold it close.
Okay, I was thinking earlier when you were talking that I wouldn't be qualified to sit under the desire tree because my heart is so full of nonsense. My mind is so full of nonsense that it confuses my heart. And I would... So much nonsense would manifest under that tree, it would baffle everybody. But when you make ghee, you take the butter and you heat it up, and immediately it turns into a liquid, and you have solids from the fat, and you have liquid from the fat, and you have solids from the milk, and you have to separate out by continuously cooking and continuously heating. Get it to a rapid boil, and sooner or later the solids will sink to the bottom, and you siphon it all off.
Oh, I see.
There you go.
Is there any scraping, or do you leave it till the end?
You can scrape out the solids and use them for cooking.
Okay, so you can, but you see the difference. They separate out
they separate
with a little
out.
Heat. Okay, so there we have a useful metaphor here, ghee, and so let's just flesh it out a little bit. What's the heat? So let's just say. Our heart is like hardened butter, and we want to make it into ghee. Okay? So now our process of chanting is like, so what's the heat? What is the heat?
Chanting.
Well, we have the perfect word in this verse, tapas tvam tavi. Tapa means heat, actually. In Sanskrit, there's a kind of heat. So this is tapo divyam putrakayena sattvam. This is a classic verse from Lord Rishabhadev. He says, tapo dibhyam. He gives this word, divine tapasya. Divine heat. So what is that heat? If we're applying heat to our life, then we're performing this tapasya, which is we're living a regulated life of chanting, avoiding the four sinful activities. Not avoiding the four regulative principles. We're embracing the four regulative principles, avoiding the four sinful kinds of activities, and at the same time, so that's a kind of tapasya, right? It means everyone else is doing this, that, and by higher intelligence, by cultivating higher intelligence, intelligence means, the good thing is, our intelligence is intelligent. And so when you educate the intelligence through reading Bhagavad Gita and you understand and the intelligence gets it that this is good for me and that's bad for me, then you actually discriminate. You walk through the world and you make discrimination. That won't help me. That's not in my self-interest. This is called anartha. Anartha means something that's not in my interest, but I do it anyway. Why? Because I have no intelligence. My intelligence has become polluted. So I purify my intelligence, and then I know what's good for me, what's not good for me, and then I move forward. This is important in the process of making ghee out of my heart. And I apply the heat every day, and then what's the scraping process? The scraping means I'm sifting out the impurities as they come and putting them to one side. What is that? What? Anartha Nivritti. Yes, that's the definition of the process, Anartha Nivritti. But what is it actually? What is the mechanism? What is taking place in your life on a daily basis so that, like Bhaktivatsal Prabhu said, that he may sit under the desire tree, but he's not guaranteeing what's going to come out because he's not sure. And Ramananda Sakha Prabhu said, I don't know what's, it's hard to distinguish one thing for another. It means, has the coagulation actually taken place? Can I see what's material desire, what's a spiritual desire? Can I distinguish between these kinds of things? Is it difficult to see? Is that one problem? Yes.
Kind of accept what is favorable to practice devotional service. I mean, just at a higher level, because not having the knowledge exactly what is good for the, devotion or not. So look at it from perspective, what doesn't disturb us in continuing with devotional service and accept that
so
and
she's
reject or avoid.
A very practical tool. That's very good. So this comes under the realm of this sadhana bhakti, this vidhi bhakti, this practice in the beginning, where we're accepting things favorable and rejecting things which are unfavorable. But how do we know? How do I know what's favorable and unfavorable? Pardon?
Ask the guru.
And what is the guru talking about? Shastra. Guru is like a lawyer, right? Lawyer knows all the books, and you go in and it's like, look, I ran over a guy's mailbox, and then I drove across the lawn, and this and that, what should I do now? We'll go ask a Kurnath, and he'll say, well, according to the law, you know, were you unconscious? Why were you unconscious? You know, so I can get you off because of this, this, and that. He knows the law. So you have to approach somebody who knows the law, and you can say, what's favorable for me? You have to put yourself in proper guidance under Shastra, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. This is the regulated life of Vidhi Bhakti. So I'm coming under this control. I say, I don't know. Arjuna says, I don't know. In the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, he's saying all these things. My family's going to be killed. I won't be able to join the kingdom. It's going to ruin the population and all these kinds of things. And then he, you know, becomes silent. And then he says, I don't know what to do, Krishna. You tell me. Now I accept you as a spiritual master. So you please instruct me. What's the proper thing to do? And then Krishna immediately, after smiling, then he says, okay, now I'll tell you. First of all, you're all nonsense. That's the first thing. Just forget everything. You don't know what you're talking about. Now I'm going to tell you. You're not your body. And then he begins to tell him about non-reactive work. And he talks about Buddhi Yoga and how there's intelligence coming from within his own heart, from Krishna, and how he can line that up with Shastra. And he gives them the whole world of knowledge of how to actually go back to Godhead and practice spiritual life. So yes, we have to take this guidance from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra and align ourselves. So in the process of devotional service, we begin Adau Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangata Bhajana Kriya Tano Narta Nivritti Syatato Nishta Ruchistata. In the beginning, there's some faith, Adau Shraddha. Shraddha is this impetus to take the devotional service somehow through good fortune. I've gotten some spiritual capital, and therefore I'm attracted to devotional service. And what do? I come and I associate with devotees. But after associating with devotees, I begin to follow the process of bhajana kriya, regulated process. And this regulation is based on these principles, accepting things which are favorable, rejecting things which are unfavorable, right? This is the beginning. And so there are many favorable things and many unfavorable things, and we have to take guidance. And there's a balance in doing that also, which is described as niyamagraha in the nectar of instruction, which is the quintessential, elementary, essential teaching of how to progress in bhakti yoga. Rupa Goswami says, niyamagraha. As you're practicing these rules and regulations, you can't do them just for the sake of doing them. You actually have to be doing them for the sake of removing the material desires from your heart, not just because you're going through the motions and then internally you're keeping everything. And also, you can't reject the rules and regulations and just act independently or whimsically. You actually have to do both. So that means that you consciously, using your volition, have to follow this process and at the same time be aware that there are certain things that need to be expunged and take things which are favorable, reject things which are unfavorable. Can I do that? Is it possible for me to accept some things which are favorable and give up other things which are unfavorable? Yes or no?
Yes.
Otherwise I'm quitting and I'm leaving right now. You tell me. It's possible?
Yes.
Can you give me an example? What's the example? What's an example of something in your own life you accepted that was favorable? Then you had to make a decision. Is this favorable and unfavorable? Someone said, this is favorable. And you said, well, it's not really in tune with my lifestyle right now, but it's favorable, so I'm going to accept it. Use the microphone. Yes.
So regulative principles, devotee association, you know, taking shelter of holy name, all that. So
all that means... That was I'm asking personally what something personally happened to you. A crossroads where there was something where you realized this is favorable, I have to accept it. I want to know the minute where you were. Were you driving your car? Were you walking in the kitchen when you decided that I'm going to do this one thing?
Following rules on the road, you know, while driving, you follow the rules.
No, I'm talking about devotional service.
Okay.
When did it come to you? Yes.
Like when I first time, like before 3 years, when I first time made the DOT.
See, I'm sitting up now. I want to hear because he's saying now when I and now I'm interested. Go ahead.
Okay, so like before 3 years, I made one DOT in LA, and that was the first time I made some DOT from Hare Krishna moment. And you know, like the way, like seeing like what he's doing in his life, he's become this example for me. And that's at that moment I didn't mind like this is what I supposed to be, you know, like do this, and this is more favorable for me. And now after practicing, like it's more and more favorable.
What a powerful tool he just gave us. He talked about the association, right?
Right.
And how just by seeing the example of someone else who's on a higher platform, who's showing spiritual power, right?
Right.
That you wanted to become like that.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Is that it? So look at that. We have something very practical. Just by... Hello? Somebody there on the phone? We can hear you. So... Just by association. So now give us some Shastra to back it up about this association. Okay, hands in the front row. We got pundits in the back and in the front.
Like Mrigari example, as soon as Narad, he learned from the Narad Muni that I'm doing the same.
Tell who Mrigari is, what his name means, what his mentality was.
Mrigari was like, he was very cruel person. Who was just killing the? He was half living and the birds and everything, birds, animals. He was just not killing them completely, and he was half killing and giving, and that caused the pain and all to them more. So he was very cruel. So once Narad Muni visited and he told him that how he is doing sin, then he understood and he left his propensity and he took it very seriously, and immediately he broken his bow. And he has taken instruction from the Narad Muni.
Who made him break his bow? Narad, did he break it on his own?
Yeah, he broken by his own. That determination he got that, yes, I have to break my bow.
Was he asked to break his bow, or did he just suddenly break his bow?
No, he asked.
Who asked?
Narad Muni.
Okay, that's an important part of the story, isn't it? Because yes. Narad Muni said, first you break your bow, then I'll give you more, right? This is a very important aspect. Keep going.
Then after that, like he took an instruction, and the next time, like he was following the his instruction. But next time, when Narad Muni visited with Parvat Muni, and he saw like the Mrigari now became saint, and he was with his wife, the practicing the devotional service. So when they saw that Narad Muni and Parvat Muni is approaching, but he was like hesitated to offer him the obeisances. Then that later it found that Narad Muni, that there is a row of the ant is passing in front of him. So, because to save them, he was not able to offer obeisances properly. So, it was like change of completely heart happened, just taking the instruction of Narad Muni very seriously.
What a nice citation from Shastra. And where does it come from?
It is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells this.
To?
I don't know.
Sanatan Goswami. So when you give the citation, it's even more powerful. You say, Lord Chaitanya tells Sanatan Goswami in the 19th chapter of the Atmarama verse, which is not 19th chapter, it's the 23rd, I think, and 25th. And then say it. Very powerful. So we have this example of a hunter who thought it was a great idea to half-kill animals and let them writhe in pain. And after he met Narada Muni, and Narada spoke to him and told him how he was going to suffer, how the hunter was going to suffer because of sinful reactions. And also, Narada Muni, then he became a little interested, but Narada Muni said, if you want to know more, you have to first break your bow. So what does that mean to you, breaking your bow? That's an important thing, isn't it? There's also a story of the Sanatana Goswami and the touchstone. Do you know the story? How the man, he wanted the most valuable thing, and he was informed that there was a touchstone and that it was being kept by this sadhu in Vrindavan named Sanatana Goswami. So at great trouble, he went there and he asked for this most valuable thing, and Sanatana said, sure, you can have it. It's in the garbage. And he picked it out of the garbage and he went away and he's turning everything into gold. And then he felt unsatisfied. And his mind went back to the incident where Sanatana Goswami told him that it was in the garbage. And he thought, maybe I've been cheated. Maybe this isn't the best thing. And the most compelling part of the story for me is when he goes back to Sanatana Goswami and says, wait a minute. You know, I've got all the gold in the world that I want now, but I'm unhappy. You know, I've made everything of gold and my wife and kids are still not satisfied. And, you know, everything is not the way I thought it would be, but you kept this in the garbage, so where's the better thing? And then Sanatana Goswami says, I'll tell you, but what? First, throw it away. Now, in this story, then he's got this thing that turns everything into gold, right? And he's thinking, on faith, this person says, throw it in the river, and it'll be gone. And then I'll tell you. Same thing in the story with McGrory. He said, break your bow. Now, that would be equivalent to one of you throwing away your laptop. You got everything on your laptop and your backup drive, right? It's like, take your iPad, your iPhone, your thing, and throw it in the river. Then I'll tell you. Like, wait a minute. So he said, break your bow. And so there, look at that, right there. That's where our advancement in spiritual life comes. At that very moment, when I decide. Why? Because I have volition. And volition means? Conscious choice. I'm a conscious living being. I have choice. That's where love comes in. In this practice of Vidhi Bhakti, and I decide that I'm going to break the bow. I decide that I'm going to do this process. I'm going to accept the favorable thing. I'm going to reject the unfavorable thing. I broke the bow. I decided I'm going to do it now. And I'm going to take proper instruction. I'm going to move ahead. I get to choose. Whose fault is it if I'm not making advancement in spiritual life? You sure?
Yes.
Isn't it the fault of the GBC? Isn't it the fault of somebody else who fell down some other time? People do this all the time. They say, look at all these people fell down. Therefore, I can't make advancement. They fell down. Look at them. Look over there. Look over there. Don't look at me. Look over there. They fell down. Therefore, I can't make advancement. Nobody else can make advancement, right? Is that our philosophy or not? It's not our philosophy. Our philosophy is that it's up to you. You have to decide. You have to break your bow. You have to take proper instruction. You have to advance. And if you're not advancing, it's nobody else's fault. It's your fault. Because devotional service cannot be checked under any circumstances. You can be in jail and you can be deaf and dumb. It doesn't matter. I can say, I can't chant my rounds. I'm too busy. You have 24 hours in a day, just like everybody else has 24 hours in a day. I met a devotee who's deaf and dumb when I was in the UK. And he's preaching all over England. Preaching all over England. He wrote a book, a Krishna conscious book that is affecting thousands of deaf and dumb people all over England. What to speak of people who can speak and hear. So is there any check to devotional service? It's up to me. I decide. I have volition. So I must approach the desire tree. I must approach the mantra. I have to take the mantra and I have to decide, am I going to make advancement or not? So in this Brahma Samhita, Lord Chaitanya brought this out and he gave it to all his disciples because they had volition. And he knew, read this, go back to Godhead. You'll understand everything about spiritual life. And that's why we've received this great mercy. We have this. We have the Srimad Bhagavatam. We have more than we can possibly digest all in one lifetime. But we must take it.